Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
And our, it's not a guest, he's the producer, he's the guy that keeps things rolling around here, Bryce.
Hi, it's Bryce here, holding down the fort.
Yeah, well, After Things, I've got a topic for us. This is where we talk about what it's like to be a creative, and I just spent a couple days, and thank you very much, I'm at Britt and Brianna Winter's house here, using their theater here, and brought me a water. Say hello. Come on, we can lean in. You can say hello. You may have remembered her from the wedding as the
Red
Witch.
Hi, Britt. Hello.
In and out. Can't hear what they're saying. Hopefully it's
That's
good.
Fine.
Yeah, no, they can hear you say that, though.
Okay, good.
Here's the thing. I was at the Boing Boing Weekend of Wonder, which was really awesome. It was at the Mission Inn in Riverside, this huge, awesome, sprawling Mission Hotel that's got, you know, it has rotundas that go six stories. It's got catacombs. It's an incredible place. I did a workshop on how to get out of a straitjacket. Taught regular folks how to do it. It's very, very cool. It's put on by Bob Self, who does a baby tattoo, which is this really cool art house publishing company. And just a lot of great different things that were going on there. You know, it was a fun thing to be a creative person. But while this was going on, I was following a little bit of the brouhaha. There has been a major disturbance in the online force, I guess we could call it. Okay. And it's one of these things that we're all kind of aware of in the background, but it's been causing a lot of consternation. And that is with the Apple with iOS 9, the latest version of the software for the iPhone. Mm-hmm. They have made it extremely easy to go onto the App Store and download an ad blocker for Safari, for mobile Safari.
That's right.
What's significant about this is the fact that mobile is the largest area of growth for web searching. And if you want an ad blocker right now, it's pretty easy when you do it on your desktop if you know what you're doing and you know what you're looking for. In mobile, there's been a lot of stuff in Android and stuff and a lot of kind of patch and go kind of stuff, but default kind of things, it's not as been as easy because Google serves their own ads and tracks you anyways. Apple putting this into there, making it very easy for you to put these ad blockers in there. We don't even get into the tracking, but just the idea that you can get rid of a lot of ads on web pages has caused jubilation from some quarters, mm-hmm. frustration from others. And it's going to be disruptive.
So let's drop the sides, because as Andrew pointed out, this became very, very contentious very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. If you are pro ad blocker, you cite the fact that on mobile, and I think this is probably the reason why Apple decided to make a move, ads can very often feel like viruses. You know, they mm-hmm. open up different apps. They direct you to places. They make it feel like your web experience is being, not only intruded upon, but you're being redirected to places that you don't want to go. It can kind of make your phone seem insecure. By the way of some of the apps. So that's Apple's idea. Meanwhile, on the other side, and where you saw the greatest wailing and gnashing of teeth, were a lot of these companies like The Verge or Business Insider or Vice Media, stuff like that. We're seeing this article from Nilay Patel of The Verge entitled "Welcome to Hell." Just in case you wouldn't have an idea of where he's on, what side he's on. But they say, hey, listen, this is the only way that we can give you free content and to have very robust ad blockers that take out all of our ability to prove impressions mm-hmm. to advertisers. We can't function. You are killing our business model. And they feel kind of attacked from both ends. from Apple and Android in terms of now making ad blockers very, very readily available. And then on the other end from places like Facebook, which seek to take their content and repurpose it in Facebook's interface without you having to visit their websites and see their advertising. Bryce, I think you had a bit of a reaction to this on Twitter. I'm very glad that you're here for this discussion.
Yeah, well, so I did read that Verge article from Nilay Patel, which does make, I think, a really interesting point in that ads are a major revenue source for these outlets. And as ad blocking is very normalized on desktop browsing, as it becomes more normalized on mobile browsing, you're going to have you're definitely going to see, especially on these big outlets, a hit in revenue. But on the other hand, you know, let me pull up my Twitter because I took some screenshots from The Verge the day that article went out, and it's. It's no surprise here. This is TheVerge.com. You type in TheVerge.com on your phone, and the very first thing you get is a full screen advertisement for the new Galaxy phone.
The Edge Plus and the Note.
Right. And then on desktop, I've got a widescreen monitor, so you go to The Verge, and it's like a proportional thing. So it stretches to fit the size of your window. So literally 70% of this screen is filled with a Galaxy phone ad, and then the content is at the very bottom. I feel like there's some backlash there of just like, you guys really kind of screwed this up lately. It's making mobile browsing it's hurting the experience of mobile browsing to the point where it's becoming necessary, at least on some level.
Let me check for a moment. I'm a publisher. You know, with Justin, we have itrix.com, and we have our own ad network we run ourselves, which is blocked. If you use one of these blockers and you go to itrix.com, you're not going to get our banner ads. You're still going to get our sponsored posts. Those things will come through. And I'm totally cool with that. You know, I'm totally cool with that because part of the problem is that if you go to a website, part of the problem isn't just the fact that somebody wants to sell you stuff. It's the way that it's been done. When you go there, it's like, yeah, with the ad blocker, that sponsor thing has come up. Part of it is you don't know how many times have you gone to a mobile site and all of a sudden had the app store open?
Yes.
Because, you know, and I go to websites that people I like. I have friends that have websites I go to, and all of a sudden, whatever their ad network, all of a sudden I'm popped over into the effing app store because you let some script run on there you should not have done.
And it's not just scummy apps. It's Uber and it's Candy Crush. Mm-hmm. It's these big mainstream apps that are doing this.
Which that behavior feels like a virus. It feels like my phone is compromised.
You have the videos that automatically start playing when I'm on mobile trying to get a signal. Then all of a sudden I watch a video start to load and I'm in the middle of nowhere and I can't get the rest of the page load, whatever. A number of times I have actually intentionally clicked on a mobile ad, intentionally clicked, probably zero. Number of times I've tried to click on something else, but because of some tricky JavaScript, it all of a sudden jumps down on you or whatever, or because the framing isn't quite what they do. Several. I put a link. I actually emailed a couple people because CNN will run these things. They look like articles, and they had, check out this brain supplement that Stephen Hawking swears by. And it didn't say advertiser above it. It had advertiser below it, but I took screen grabs. It did not say advertiser above it. It said it below it, and you click through, and it takes you to what looks like a CNN page. It even has this bogus URL of cnnweb.com, blah, 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 whatever, okay?
Right, so yes. The original link was cnn.com-news.report, and then you go to the full link, and it takes you to a Lulu's women's
So fashion. This got covered. I'm glad to see that. I mean, because that was – And CNN can say, well, it's a third party thing. Like, yes, you traded your rep. What's that?
We do have the image of it, though.
Yeah, I see. I got screen grabs of it too. You know, and it's this thing where CNN traded their reputation to a third party, who then let that be used for this. And that is, to me, dishonest. When you see those things below, those faux articles, like, oh, check this out, if they're not clearly labeled, that's I don't mind, you know, if you like, you know, the discuss boxes or whatever, check this other thing out by Pop Quiz Fun 101, find out what these celebrities look like this. Like, that's junk, whatever. If it's marked, you know, sponsored, whatever, that's fine. But when it's not, technically, it's probably – it's against the current FTC rules. Two, it destroys her reputation.
So let's – a quick primer before we get into kind of our larger opinions morally on this, because there's an exceptional story about the number one app for this and what the creator did with it after launching it. Mm-hmm. But this is – what we are seeing now on mobile is – the screaming and yelling of what is effectively a dying industry. Display advertising is in dire straits. They are not effective. We are moving technology away from a point in which they are really something that the companies want to put their money in. And there's a reason why, you know, the Verge, Nilay Patel, to speak for him, would probably say to you, Bryce, yeah, we do gigantic display advertising that have boxes in which you can click to get out of it. And that is where we will go. We will go for big, gigantic, you need to see it display advertising that you can click out of, because we don't do the JavaScript, like tricky boxes and blind redirects and stuff like that.
Sure.
What the bottom line is that this is just where we are with display advertising. It is hard. It is fundamentally, we are through technology reshaping the way that products are offered to us. And this was a paradigm that's been around as long as, you know, Gutenberg.
When Justin and I launched iTrix, we talked a lot about advertising, and we made a decision that our goal was, we wanted to do a blog that covered Magic News, that covered that world, and we knew that it was never going to be a super huge thing. We had an understanding of how big something like this could be, and it wasn't going to be very big, but we looked at what the size of the ad market was, you know, Magic magazines and everything else like this, and we had an idea of like, okay, we can create a business that'll be this size. If we try to get scummy and do things like find out how to do this magic trick or do this stuff, or we became those, yes, we can make it bigger, but we wouldn't be doing what we want to do. You know, we want to cover the news, and we created a business model based around the idea of, we're not going to use outside ad networks. We're not going to use Google. We'll sell our own ads internally. And as we saw display advertising become less and less viable, and because it wasn't we did more sponsored posts, and because it's exactly on topic for what our people want, it's worked out really well. And as Michael Lauk has pretty much taken over most of the day-to-day on it, it still has good traffic. It's still a nice small little business. But we weren't going to try to blow it up into something big. And what you've happened with The Verge and these other places is they're competing in a very, very dense field to tell you the thing that you're hearing somewhere else. And they are desperate to get whatever ad dollars they can, because their audiences can very quickly go elsewhere because there's nothing special to offer.
Right.
So let's get into the moral conversation about this. Marco Arment?
Arment.
Marco.org.
He, who has done some great apps before, had a app called Peace, mm-hmm. that was his ad blocker. It became the number one app, number one seller or downloaded on the App Store. It was absolutely gigantic, and within 48 hours, he took it off because, as he cited, which, for folks who have followed him, the phrase drama queen is the first one that kind of comes into my mind, but he is certainly a dramatic guy. He very, very dramatically said that this is something he doesn't want to have on his conscience, that it wore on him very quickly to decide what was a good ad, what was a bad ad, what was a good site, what was a bad site, what kind of ads should be good, what kind of ads he should allow, and he wound up letting it go. You could say conspiratorially that a guy who gets his message out very much through sites like The Verge and Gizmodo and Business Insider, he is somebody that as often his opinion is covered and his apps are therefore succeed, that he might have poisoned the well with his relationship in terms of the rest of his career by way of making himself public enemy number one with a lot of these sites. But he decided to take it away. We'll take him at face value that this was weighing on his conscience. Andrew, what was your reaction to that?
I immediately had to go to the iTunes store and ask for a refund because I bought it. You know, I bought it to support it because I thought, here's a guy that has a lot of deep experience. You know, this is a guy, I think he'd Instapaper, or he's had Instapaper. He did the magazine. This is a guy that's been in the coding side. Right. He's a guy that's in, you know, deeply into different areas of how to creating content and all that. And to see him create this, I thought was interesting because I kind of look at it like, all right, this is the step to the next version of where we want to be.
Yeah.
You know, following, and, you know, I think that, you know, you don't know what it's going to be like until you find out what it's like. And so I understand that. It's frustrating to see him go launch a saying, hey, I paid my $3. And then 2 days later, he's like, nah, I've changed my mind. Like, well, you know, okay. I don't want to pick on him too much. But I think, you know, there's a lot of frustration from people like, you know, John Gruber, who does Daring Fireball, and he makes very good passionate arguments for why we want to have these sort of ad blockers for certain kinds of ads, as he points out. And his frustration comes into it as these ad blockers block all ads. So he uses two kinds. He does sponsored posts, which are great, which is a thing that we do. And then he has a things from an ad called The Deck, which is a very ethical, very straightforward ad network that doesn't do tracking, doesn't do all the other deceptive sort of things like that. The deck is blocked on his site.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit frustrated by that. But he shows a really good article from Coy Vin. If you want to click through on that, and it shows, you know, it's just this we're watching a video, and this is Coven is explaining. He went through a New York Times article to explain it's all about enabling of ad blocking, and you can't read the effing article because yes. The ads that pop up on there stop you from being able to scroll down the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this happens constantly.
Now, this is why I put ad blockers onto my thing. I put ad blockers on there not because I'm cheap and I don't want to look at your messages, because so many sites were unusable and forced between not going to them or opening up links and not knowing, you know, or just enabling a blocker and to read it and to think, let the more subtle things go through, that's fine. I was a bit pushed over the edge by CNN and using those things that weren't marketed as, you know, advertorial or whatever, that were deceptive. The deceptive stuff drives me crazy.
Do you think, this is a side jag, but I don't know that I feel like that CNN stuff could be a third party sort of bad actor, not CNN thing.
You know, it is. I'm sure it is. But they gave them the ability to do that.
Yeah.
They didn't police it. And I don't think that was CNN. I don't think that was CNN, you know, intention. I don't think that's what they wanted to happen. But that's the consequence of what happens is when they gave another party permission to put stuff on their page. Guess what? This is what happens, you know?
That's also not an excuse. I mean, like, I can see, you know, every once in a while and I think this is something that we might have matured out of, but, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you used to get, you know, the one-day blog kerfuffle over, like, you know, a story about domestic violence that has next to it, like, some crass Google ad or something, you know, and you would see, you know, those kind of like, oh, look, this ad's on this. And now I think we've kind of matured out of that. Every once in a while, a thing like that, okay, whatever. It's the internet, you know, especially if you're working with Google, sometimes you're going to have stuff like that. If you're CNN, that's not an excuse. Like you, if people are gaming your system and devaluing your content.
Sure.
We, you know, you don't know who, and it's not just the what's coming on your page. You don't know what they're tracking, what information they're looking at. Is that ad network looking, you know, noticing that, man, Bryce is clicking on a lot of things that have to do with head lice, you know? Bryce is clicking on a lot of things that have to do with, you know,
we should target razors.
You know, and yeah, you know, I mean, Bryce has this weird unhealthy fixation on peanut butter, you know, and so all of a sudden somebody has that information. And when we go into the web, we know that, but that's a thing like, yeah, you're also bringing in these third parties we didn't know. You know, if you go to iTrix, I think we have Discuss comment system. And Discuss, part of the deal with Discuss is that, you know, they're going to plug through and put these weird, screwy sort of like, hey, click on these links, whatever like that. Be honest with you, I don't know what tracking they put on there. Other than that, other than whatever some worm or malware got in there, we're not tracking you or doing anything else other than within our own little ad network. You go to Weird Things, we're not doing – we're not really advertising much there, but we're taking responsibility for that. You know, and I think that what's going to happen is I think the middle ground people are going to hurt. The Verge and a lot of these other ones are going to hurt. New York Times and these other sites are going to have to start rethinking it. I know CNET was putting up like a banner on their thing if you used an ad blocker saying, hey, we can't show you this article because you have an ad blocker on. Great. Hmm. See you later, guys. You know,
I think you've seen, and I don't know whether or not this was on purpose or not, but a friend of mine who had an ad blocker when using Imgur, you did not get your social sharing tab if you had an ad blocker. So you
some ad blockers have that built in. You can say, don't enable this feature. That's like in Crystal or one of the other ones. That's a thing like turn. I think that was maybe that was Peace was like shut those things off too because, you know, because
those are also track. Those also have their own little tracking things.
And I don't download stuff illegally. I'm not a guy trying to get stuff for free. All my iTunes videos, I saw that iShift price. All my videos, everything I have is things that I buy. I'm not a guy trying to do that. And I don't mind paying for content when it's worth it or whatever. I would pay for more subscriptions from like bigger newspapers if it wasn't just outrageously priced. Mm-hmm. You know, I go to I hesitate on clicking through because like half the New York Times articles I read of my 10-month per month limit I think are were accidental clicks or whatever. I would pay for a New York Times or an LA Times subscription if it wasn't outrageous. I used to subscribe to Wired magazine, but then it was the issue that killed it for me, and I have a tremendous amount of respect, but it was the Nerdist Star Wars cover crossover. it was seeing Hardwick on the front with all of my favorite Star Wars characters. It's like, no, you just crossed a line. Give him his own cover, but leave my Star Wars alone. You know,
there was a friend of all of us, very once frustratingly made the point to go ahead and just. You can count on your hand the last 10 years that we have had a Wired cover that isn't a white guy or a robot. That it's just if you eliminate just the white guys and the robots that, one hand, you can count the covers.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. But anyhow, I think that, this is – I thought we'd bring this up as a topic here because – we need to evolve. We need to adapt. And, we do our podcast here supported by Patreon. And that's not a thing that scales for other enterprises, but there are other ways to support it. But also, maybe the age of let's have the big conglomerate with the big, huge ad networks is going to go through disruption. I think, on iTrix. Yeah. I mean, we don't really push our banners on iTrix anymore. We're more, it's become the sponsored posts. And we don't get people complaining about them because usually it's the kind of thing people want to know. We couldn't, I know it's hard for like, I have friends that do movie blogs and stuff, and I've watched all of a sudden pop-ups pop up on them, and I can't go to certain sites like the Collider because just the ads make it intolerable. Mm-hmm. I'll look at the RSS feed and I'll see what's new or interesting, but I rarely click through because I can't get to the article.
This has just been something that's been on the horizon for a very, very long time. And when the web was young, we saw the advent of incredibly annoying and intrusive banner ads. That kind of receded as there seemed to be a sense of like, hey, listen, this is young. More people are going to come here. Display. Don't worry, display advertising. Everything's going to be all right. And it is for niche. Niche has done very, very well on the web. We for iTrix, especially in a niche where magic, where advertising is very often content. People love to see trailers for new products and stuff like that. There is certainly a market. But like you said, you have this whole class of publishers that are all just launching as many verticals as they can, chaining as many 18-year-olds in Manhattan to desks as they possibly can, so they can all write headlines and about something that they find on Reddit, and those are where you're seeing the squeeze. And I think it is no coincidence that they all reacted like they just got shot in the leg. They're all screaming like homeboy at the beginning of Reservoir Dogs.
They have that fear of, because of Facebook, as Facebook's garden, you know, the walls of this garden extend further and further out, that they're going to lose that. And I warned about, don't give everything into them. I trust, you know, Facebook wants to make a good product. I don't use Facebook Messenger. I don't use that because I don't need another chance for them to market to me and you know, tabulate me. I don't participate in Facebook all that much because I felt like the moment they say, oh yeah, no, to reach your followers, you actually have to pay to do that. And that wasn't part of the original transaction. I thought that was dishonest and shady, but I still use it because, you know, my publisher and my people, you know, want me to do that. But I do it, you know, not joyfully.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think of sponsorship with these outlets, the one kind of website that I think I like the way they do it, and I don't know how sustainable it is. I actually like the way Digg has been doing advertisements since they relaunched as like a curated sort of news aggregator. They've got these kind of tiles of news articles, and usually right here in the corner they'll have a sponsored ad or like, you know, a MeUndies thing or something. And it's not the kind of thing that an ad blocker will hit. It's not intrusive like some sort of display or some sort of popover. It's more visible as a consumer of what's in that space.
You know, there's.
But that's one ad, you know, at a time.
Here's the point. Mm-hmm. We need to evolve. Advertising needs to evolve. Mm-hmm. We have seen part of it. We will see more of it, because the idea of get yourself in front of the public by any means necessary, when we have increasing controls over our mediums, is just not viable. And that's what we're seeing.
I think that there's a lot of opportunity here for, you know, Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, and Jeff Bezos through his Amazon and through everything else like that, you know, what if Amazon came out with a browser, and what it was is through all of the websites that participated on this, you know, it was going to be almost minimal ads, or you're only going to get an ad in one part of the screen, which is going to be something you could buy on Amazon. Mm-hmm. But it was part of, you know, a subscription thing. You know, you pay $5 a month, or you pay this or whatever. And the idea that then all the sites that participate get a portion of it or something, you know, or specialized content. You get into like a Netflix model, essentially, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, would that work? I don't know. I have no idea. And I think – but there are different ways in which you can try to make these things –
that would basically function. Be an ad network that consumers would subscribe to turn off, is what it sounds like.
Because I use Amazon, I lock myself. I'm like, well, maybe I'd have Amazon products or something. But it could be like, but if you took Google, or again, Google's the biggest advertiser in the world. Mm-hmm. Some third party that's not primarily invested in advertising, you know, that said, hey, we're going to build, you know, we're going to make a deal with all of the New York Times, all these other people like this. You pay us a flat fee a year, and there's going to be an entire network of sites. You're going to have a better experience. You're not going to have the ads. You're not going to be tracked or whatever, but you're going to still get paid.
But what is the consumer motivation? Because, the only way I could imagine someone would want to be a part of that on the user side would be either if there was – I don't know, a deal like this, like some sort of browser only, like in the Amazon example, some sort of browser only price. Like, I don't know why anybody would want to use that product.
Well, I mean, again, there are people out there that use Popcorn Time.
Sure.
And there are people who use Netflix. You know, there are people like me who want to do the ethical thing and would like to compensate people for the content they create. Mm-hmm. And if I could be in an environment where the content was presented to me just purely for the content and not the editorial and purely from that, I would want to participate on that. Most people aren't like me. I know that. Are there enough people to sustain that?
There's something to be spoken for quality. You know, that it's just a good, well-built app that I'm able to curate better. You know, I haven't had an RSS feed since Google shut down Google Reader. Mm-hmm. I would love, and maybe it's a world in which we have a third party that aggregates a bunch of places and makes sure that they get paid, and maybe it's something like Flipbook or what Flipbook kind of aspired to be, mm-hmm. That we are able, that I'm able to pay for the experience that I want to be informed and just be on the right side with the people that gather the news. I like that. You know, like the WWE Network, you can get everything that you could have gotten on the WWE Network, either on YouTube or streaming on whatever site, you know? Mm-hmm. And some of it, the YouTube stuff, they left up, you know, WWE just decided not to file a claim against, you know, the 1997 Bash at the Beach. But it was there. It existed. You could find it. You could find it online. You could find it on mobile. But the app matters. You know, the app, I can just go to the app. I have a search bar. It could be better, but it's good enough. I can find it. I can search by various people. It's just a better experience, and I'm happy to pay a subscription price for it.
Well, with something like news, is there a way to is there a way that content, which is timely and in some cases disposable, is there any way to make it worth the while to enrich that media so that there is a similar feature set to?
Well, no, I mean the key would be,
that's a tough thing. Is there so, it's so saturated that there are,
yes. But that doesn't mean that there's not a different way to look at it.
Sure.
My primary way of interacting with the world is Feedly. When Google Reader went away, and I thought that was a colossal mistake on Google's part too, because I think that they could have really created, you know, and they did that, you know, as, you know, tablets and everything else started to become more and more popular. Feedly is a lot like, you know, Apple just launched Apple News, mm-hmm. which I think on the phone looks cool. It looks good, but on the iPad, I hate tiled when all the things are tiled across and different things. It's not readable to me, you know, because I just like to scan down. Sure. But that being said, RSS I thought was great, and it didn't take off because it was still a geeky, techy kind of thing, but you look at the way people consume news and Facebook and other things, it sort of is like that. There still could be an opportunity for that, but I don't know. I think there's a lot of different answers. But would I participate in, you know, would I pay for something that was going to be tailor-made to a lot of my tastes and stuff if I knew that it was, you know, curated? Maybe. Mm-hmm. It just got to be good, though. And how much good – I go to – you know, I'll go to medium.com 3 days in a row, and there's just nothing. There's nothing I care about, you know? And this is supposed to be really curated, you know, specific kind of content. You know, you go to Mashable and you go to this. It's so much of it's 90%, it's the same thing everywhere.
Right. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned, because I use NewsBlur for my RSS. Mm-hmm. I use it, you know, all the time, every day, basically. And it's not a free service. I use the premium tier because I have so many feeds. Partially because the experience is great on you know, on the web and on my phone and everything, and so I'm happy to pay for the experience of getting this content, but I generally wouldn't pay for any specific feed. Like, I probably wouldn't mm-hmm. pay for access to Boing.
That's actually what kicked me out, or what made me part of what did not take me to another RSS readers, because I had a lot of these technology sites on there, and it was like the same thing that Andrew like was pointing out, that it's just like it was hard to, like, it's like, why do I have an RSS feed if I'm sifting through like so much crap, like everybody repeating the one thing about iOS 9 that no one's paying attention to, like, you mm-hmm. know, it just
Then I think about the content that I do intend to pay for, and I don't know if you guys know about Giant Bomb, but in the already extremely saturated world of video game coverage, these guys do quick looks and video features and podcasts, very barely any like actual journalism, you know, article writing content. It's a lot of video stuff. And so it's not exactly the same niche that a New York Times would do, but as someone who does appreciate content that I enjoy regularly, that's actually something that I feel good about supporting, and feel like I get that. Like, I don't just do it mm-hmm. out of the goodness of my heart. I actually feel like it's a good transaction happening.
Well, and that Giant Bomb have been much like Rooster Teeth, have defined themselves based on their personalities,
right?
And you know, they are selling the relationship that people have to the personalities that they have cultivated, and they've done a really, really great job of keeping them together and giving them the freedom to do what they want.
And their content ultimately is less disposable than news. It's a little more, it's more timeless.
Sure. News is universal. A relationship you have with somebody talking about the news is very, very personal, and often you want to go through great distances to do.
Yeah.
You look at, and I think that's what you talk about. It's like when it's brand, it's personal. You take a brand like Vice, mm-hmm. which has become, you know, a monster brand. You know, it's in TV, it's in documentary, it's web. They're like, hey, we're gonna cover, you know, we're gonna take what was that, you know, the weekly, you know, in a really good city alternative newspaper mentality, you know, done by maybe people who are, you know, a little more credible and a little bit less crunchy all the time, but they're still crunchy, but still, and do some cool stuff. It became a really cool thing. You look at Vice headlines and you're like, man, this is interesting. This is real journalism, you know, where part of the problem with bigger, you know, New York Times, a lot of these other enterprises have is they have a big staff, and they're covering a lot of stuff. There's not a lot of people who care about, you know, these things as, you know, granular. And then they start getting into these blogs and then trying to get into these special, like, we'll have our own, you know, political coverage, et cetera, and all that, which, you know, may work, may not. But crunchy means kind of hippie-ish or granola, you know, for the people in the chat room who are wondering. But it's, you know, when your brand doesn't mean anything, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, the marketing of our personalities is something that I think we have all thrown our lot into that concept. Is you know, the more that everybody can know who we are, know what we're about, the more that they will be interested when we want to make a fair transaction of goods for services.
My advice to people out there worried about this future is, if you're creating something that anybody else can create, anybody can pick up, you know, get a product and do a review. It may not be a good review. It doesn't have as much value unless you have a lot of insight and expertise to bring into it. You know, when there's a new product, new software, there are certain things like the Ars Technica reviews are going to be really good. There's a handful of people who do amazing jobs. Everybody else does not. If you're doing something that's so easily done by somebody else and probably will be done by a machine algorithm in 5 years, mm-hmm. you're not going to be happy. Find that special little niche. Carve your own little space out of there, and you're going to become essential.
Right. Though I guess maybe that's not a saving grace for the entire industry as a whole. I don't know if that is something that necessarily...
Well, but what industry? Are we talking about the advertising industry? Are we talking about the blog industry?
I guess the blog industry.
The blog industry? But listen, there's... a lot of this is going to mean get better, more relatable, more you know, writers for which people have a connection to, you know, and that might mean moderating your writing style. That might mean that not everything needs to be a Disney princess quiz. You know, it's something that is an evolution. I mean, I'm very good friends with somebody I've known forever. I've been watching Donald Trump stump speeches for the last 2 days, writing for The Contender, and now I just feel like I'm just falling into these, like, very Trump. He's a great guy. I've known him for years. He's an amazing guy. But Steve Kovac, a Business Insider, now a Technology Insider, their new vertical, we've talked a bunch about, you know, how much Business Insider really started out as, like, the spammiest of the spammy of everything being a slideshow and you know, spreading out two sentences over 9 page views. Yeah. And that was something that they had to evolve out of, that they said, this is hurting us more than it is helping us. We can't, that might be good for us now. It's not good for us in 2 years. Now, they still are, you know, they have a lot of practices that I find very annoying, but this is the game. The game is create these very interesting places that have news value that people want to get. This has always changed. This is not new. You know, newspapers have evolved into blogs. Blogs have evolved into RSS feeds and video features. And we've all found different ways to get your message across. This is just another evolution. It's an important one because it means that, much in the same way that newspapers found themselves disrupted when their content went online for free and they wanted to sell advertising and per paper, now it's the other way around, and the advertising is having a problem while the content is designed to be out there for free. So it is curious.
But it's also like, you know, bloggers were the ones to crow about the death of the old media and didn't realize that their time frame was going to be even shorter. And that's, you know, Business Insider is a brand that says they've got, if they have more credibility, then they can do things like conferences. You know, TechCrunch was a brand that got into a space that was sort of initially overlooked, but then tried to delve deeply into it and build up a reputation of a brand, and then became an acquisition target for other companies. Said, well, they do a really good thing. Well, they've got a particular kind of reporter that do a really good thing, and they can do disrupt. They can do conferences. They can do other things that are bigger. And, you know, one of the biggest businesses in the 90s, it was a $1 billion business, was Comdexed. You know, was the idea of, oh, if we know why we have people's attention, then we can do something with it. But not everything gets to be that. And it's not, you know, nobody's future is guaranteed.
Yeah. Nope. Death haunts all of us. It is lurking behind every corner. Good night.
It's been After.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.